how to instill honor in your children. Solomon talks a lot about this. Proverbs 19, verse 18, he says, "Discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire his death." Two things I get from that proverb. First of all, it implies there's a time, if you put it off too long, that there's no longer hope. I mean, if somebody waits till their children are teenagers to take discipline seriously, in most cases, it's too late. It may be hopeless. So you need to start this very, very early. And if you neglect the right kind of discipline, this says that you ultimately desire death. So we're talking about raising up the next generation, life and death decisions, especially decisions that relate to people's eternal destiny, whether you can help them to develop a heart for God. It's certainly a continual work in progress. Solomon warns in Solomon 19, 26 and 27, it's a fascinating couple of verses. "He who assaults his father and drives his mother away is a shameful and disgraceful son. Cease listening, my son, to discipline, and you will stray from the words of true knowledge." In other words, Solomon is saying, pay attention to my counsel. It's in your own best interest. Now, Solomon is speaking to Rehoboam, who winds up listening to his peers instead of listening to wise counsel of the old. And as a result, the kingdom splits in two. Isn't that interesting? So Solomon gives all of this admonition to his children, much of which apparently fell on deaf ears. Consider Proverbs 17:21. "The father of a scoffer hath no joy." The idea of a scoffer is someone that is rebellious, disrespectful, indolent, and sarcastic. And when that happens, and parents, when you allow it to happen, you just break a parent's heart. So the key principles that we established in our last lesson are basically discipline bad attitudes, and you won't have to worry about bad behaviors. Suggested that parents consider saving corporal discipline for acts of willful defiance by a child who is old enough to understand what he or she is doing. And true respect must be earned, not just demanded. In other words, you don't want to say, don't do as I do, but just do as I say. You know, children will quickly recognize that as hypocrisy, and that's some of the worst type of parenting that you could ever do. So, how do you go about practically instilling honor? Here's some just basic guidelines, and then when we're done, maybe we can talk a little bit about them. First of all, we need to make sure, if we want to be treated with respect, that we treat proper respect, our children with proper respect. 1 Peter 2 and verse 17 says, "Show proper respect to everyone." So, my wife and I thought about this, and I think it's important that you avoid ways of disciplining that are going to humiliate the child, or is going to make the way you discipline the issue instead of the behavior that is being disciplined. Slapping on the face, flicking on the mouth, that kind of thing. I just think that sort of thing is unwise. We would not recommend it. Use a switch on the back of the legs, or, you know, maybe paddle on the rear end. Be careful, of course, it's not overdone. But I appreciate the little quip. Children are like canoes. They behave best when paddled from the rear. And that has to be done carefully and appropriately. And practice the golden rule. I think you ought to view children in many ways as little adults. And so, you wouldn't want to be humiliated by your supervisor at work, and you want to make sure that you do not humiliate them as well. My dad used to tell me that when he was a kid in school, there were literally times where if you messed up, they would set you off in a corner in the classroom and put a dunce cap on your head. I mean, that is really a terrible way to humiliate some kid, and probably a good way to destroy their self-esteem and self-concept. That kind of stuff is just out of line. In fact, I would recommend that if your children have playmates over and they misbehave and they need to be disciplined, that you call them aside in private, not in front of their peers, and you reprimand them, admonish them if they need to be, or lay out some privilege that's going to be revoked, or whatever you're going to do. Don't do it in front of their peers where they are likely to be embarrassed and then upset that you embarrass them. And then that overshadows the discipline. Sometimes it's best just to send the kids home, and then after the playmates are not in the know, it's none of their business anyway, then you deal with the problem in private. My dad used to say, families do their dirty laundry in private, not in public. And so occasionally we would have these family conferences, and he would call us in, and if there was something going on we needed to discuss that was a problem, everyone would go around and talk about what they felt about it and what they thought. No one was allowed to interrupt the other party. Everybody had their say. My dad, as the head of the house, would lead the discussion. He'd conclude with a prayer, and then he'd say, okay, we've resolved this. It is over. I don't want you talking about this negatively to other people. I want you to be loyal to your family members and to your siblings and keep this in-house. I thought that was very wise. Later on, I learned in graduate school that what he did was something known as collaboration, where you meet together and you lay out a problem and you discuss it together, come to a resolution, and then you kind of unite together as a team and then forget about it instead of letting it fester or be a cause for resentment. So you wouldn't want to be humiliated, and I think you ought to avoid humiliating your children. Discipline in private when possible. And I also think, unless they've done something to violate your trust, that you need to respect their privacy. I don't think parents ought to be eavesdropping on children in ways that cause them to feel sort of violated. If they get a letter and it's addressed to them from one of their friends, unless there's some real reason why you expect foul play, let them open their own mail, just like you would want to have your own mail opened as well. Now, when it comes to the internet and all the type of things that children can be exposed to now on the internet, you know, it may be that when you talk about giving them the privileges involved in accessing the internet, that you might let them know that you're going to check the websites they visit just because you want to be concerned and help them with that. Fortunately, when my kids were young, we didn't have those kind of concerns. But in general, I think it's important that you develop trust between the two of you, and that includes respect for privacy. Also, you respect each other in the home. I already mentioned this. You talk respectfully to them. I do not think you ought to yell at your children as a form of discipline. Speak softly, carry a big stick. Yelling and especially screaming just teaches them when they grow up that that's appropriate ways to resolve conflict. Somebody yells at me, I feel degraded. And it just is not a way to, quote, fight fair. The way you resolve conflict in your home will typically be mimicked by your children when they leave the nest. So how you talk to them and how they observe you talking to your spouse and to each other will typically be the way that they see themselves talking to their future spouse. And so unless there's a fire in the house, you don't need to be yelling. You can learn to discipline and remain calm. That doesn't mean you can't speak with a stern voice. I think that's different than yelling at your children. And we're going to talk a little bit more in the Bible class period about training your children. And you need to train them to come to you the first time when you speak to them in a normal tone of voice, instead of training them that you don't really mean it until, your decibel level is up to a high level. Very, very important. And you show honor to your own mother and father because you are teaching them how to treat you when you are older down the road. And that's just demonstrating that you honor your own father and mother, and therefore they need to honor you as well. Teach them to respect others. Insist they treat respectfully their siblings as well as their playmates. One of the rules we had in our family, we had this up on our refrigerator for many years, is some basic principles that the Hunter family lives by. It's in our family, we value God and other people. One of my wife's favorite sayings was, good manners begin at home. We live in a culture that tends to use people and love things, which is reversed. We ought to love people and use things. And so, even if they're frustrated with their playmates or the new kid on the block, always need to think about including people and not excluding ones if it's going to hurt their feelings. And just teach them to practice the golden rule in the way they talk and treat each other as well as their playmates. Manners are a sensitive awareness of the feelings of others. If you have that awareness, you have good manners, no matter what fork you use. That's Emily Post, author and columnist. I think that's right. I don't think you ought to teach etiquette simply because you're trying to be snooty. It's because, ideally, manners have to do with esteeming and honoring the other people around you. And that's what you need to teach your children. And that's why they are taught to say, excuse me, or thank you, or things along that line. Very, very important. And teach them to respect older people. Leviticus 19, verse 32, you shall rise up before the gray-headed and honor the aged, and you shall revere your God, for I am the Lord. So the traditional way that you respect older people is when they come into a room, you stop what you're doing, you stand up, you say, nice to meet you, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, or if they have permission, you can call them by their first name if they're a brother and sister in Christ. Remember, the gray head is a crown of glory. We live in a culture where men and women, especially women, are very sensitive about their age. And we often try to do amazing things to try to look younger. And we don't like it if somebody thinks that we're older than we are after we get to a certain age. It's really interesting because when children are young, they want to be thought of as being older. But once you get older, you want to be thought of as being younger. The Bible says that we're supposed to, in Proverbs 31, the worthy woman looks to the future with gladness. Someone has said it'd be better if when you're young you live in the West, and then when you're older you live in the Orient, because in the Orient, I think Steve could probably, buttress this because he travels there a lot, they really respect older people because older people have wisdom and older people have lived longer, and they still have a great respect for older men and women. And they are revered in that culture. They should be revered in God's culture, in the church. Don't let the kind of youth cult that we have in America change the way we see the interaction we ought to have with older people. And you younger people, you'd be extremely wise to cultivate good relationships with older men and women in the church and ask them their advice and counsel, because they've got a lot of mileage where they've learned a lot of things, and maybe they can help you avoid some mistakes that you might make if you just simply, like Rehoboam, consult your peers, which sadly can sometimes be nothing more in a pooling of ignorance, with all due respect. And so the Bible says that we need to do that. One of the things we taught our girls to do is after church, you're supposed to treat others as more important than yourself. Seek out two or three widows especially and ask them how they were doing and greet them before you go and run off with your friends. I don't know of other families that did that, but we did. And those widows just loved my girls because they were esteemed in that way. And we sometimes would take them with us to visit the hospital with someone who's ill. And they loved it when not Gail and Brent showed up, but when Amy and Allison showed up and would sing a spiritual hymn for them. And some of their favorite memories is going to the hospital and singing hymns for some of the folks that were ill. Think about what you can do to impact your children when they're young so that that impacts their values throughout the rest of their life. You know, the prophet Zechariah said, "Do not despise the little things." Sometimes you can honor people and show respect for them in just little ways. And I think that's why teaching appropriate manners can really make a difference. Teach your children to say, "Excuse me, pardon me, thank you, you are welcome, nice to meet you." Even though they may be shy, teach them to look adults as they meet them in the eye. It's one of the ways that you can teach them not to be self-centered, but to show respect for others. Amy was really cute when she was little, our firstborn. She would get the manners we're trying to teach her confused. And she'd bump into somebody and say, "Thank you," instead of "Excuse me." And somebody would give her a gift and she'd say, "Excuse me." And so we'd have to kind of, you know, let her practice until she got all the proper words down with the proper act. But these things make a difference. Let your guests go first. Give a seat to a lady. Open doors for others. Practice good table manners. Choose with your mouth closed. Take small bites. Ask to be excused. And in our family, we would always ask if it's the last little bit of whatever it is on the table, "May I have this, or does someone else like to have it?" Jan Bader, who is an older lady in her 80s, dear friend of ours, we asked her what was the secret to her success of over 56 years of marriage before her husband passed. And she said, "Well, my advice to couples is always, don't eat the last cookie." Pretty good advice. Who am I? I am a little thing with big meaning. I help everybody. I unlock doors, open hearts, dispel prejudice. I create friendships and goodwill. I inspire respect and admiration. Everybody loves me. I bore nobody. I violate no law. I cost nothing. Many have praised me. None have condemned me. I am pleasing to those of low and high degree. I am useful every moment of the day. Who am I? I am courtesy. And nothing is as inexpensive yet priceless as courtesy. And beloved, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13 that love does not behave itself unseemly or in a rude way. One of the ways you love other people is you show them proper courtesy. So please take the time to teach your children good manners. And stress that the point is to be thoughtful and considerate. I'd also suggest that you work hard to be real, genuine. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The idea is you're authentic. You're not in any way phony. You're not putting on airs. One of my favorite characters in the Bible is Nathanael. We don't know much about him, but when Jesus met him, he looked into his heart and he said, "Behold, a disciple without guile." And isn't that what we all ought to be in Christ? And I think we need to be that way with our parents as well, and our children as well. And one of the ways we can do that is to admit mistakes. Don't think as a parent, if you mess up, that you shouldn't be asking your children's forgiveness. You want them, when they do wrong, to ask for forgiveness. So when you occasionally mess up, be real and make sure you ask their forgiveness as well. Jesus said, "Forgive us our trespasses, even as we forgive those that trespass against us." Let me give you an example. We had a rule in our house that you weren't supposed to jump up and down on the couch or jump up and down on the seat in the car. And one of the things I'd like to do when my kids were young was I'd like to take them on errands with me. It was a good father-daughter time, and a lot of times they'd like to join me. And so I said, "Amy, you want to run with Dad to go on some errands?" And she goes, "Yes, Dad, I'd love that." And I said, "Okay, Amy, go hop in the car and I'll be with you in just a few minutes." I didn't realize what I had said. And so I come out a few minutes later, and there is Amy hopping up and down on the front seat of the car. And I thought, she knows she's not supposed to do that. And so before I asked questions, I went ahead and gave her a swat and kind of firmly admonished her. But Dad, what? You said hop in the car! I sure did, Amy. I am so wrong about having disciplined you before I realized that I didn't mean that. What do you mean you didn't mean that? Well, it was just a figure of speech. I didn't actually mean you could jump up and down in the car. But I can see why you thought that. And I was wrong. Dad messed up. Will you forgive me? And with tears in her eyes, she says, "Yes, Dad, I forgive you." I think it's important when you mess up to come clean. I think children will respect you if you do, rather than feeling like, "Well, I'm the parent, I can't ever admit that sometimes I make a mistake." Use these opportunities to point them to a higher standard. The Bible says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." So I would tell my kids, what if somebody told you to steal something or told you to lie? Should you do it? Yeah. And they kind of look at me not knowing what the answer is. And I said, "You obey your parents and you obey other people, authority figures in the Lord. I don't want you to violate your conscience. And if God forbid, one of these days we were to tell you to do something that's wrong, if it's wrong, you don't do it, because ultimately we're trying to please God, not other people." And Acts tells us that we're supposed to obey God rather than men. And you can see the wheels turning as you try to point them to a higher standard and help them to develop their own conscience. And that's a part of what good parenting is. One of the things Jesus did so often is he would answer a question with a question because he wanted his disciples to think and to develop their own faith. So obey your parents in the Lord, and it's the Lord where our priority is. And do the best you can to avoid double standards. James 1 and verse 8, "A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways." Proverbs 11:3, "The integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity." So, obviously, you want to walk the walk and talk the talk. And "don't do as I do, but do as I say" breeds disrespect and rebellion. Very important, be a parent, a respected authority figure, and not just simply your child's buddy. I don't mean by that you don't want to play with your children and have a good time with them and that kind of thing. But your children are going to have lots of peers that can be their buddies. But they're only going to have one mom and one dad that they can look up to as an authority figure. So, concentrate on being respected in the long run and not simply being liked in the short run. Remember, we're admonished in scriptures to raise them up. There are times where you kind of want to get down on their level to talk with them eyeball to eyeball, but in general, you want to serve as an example, as an adult, and you want to help them to be raised up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's what you do when you train up a child in the way he or she should go. I have some relatives that, this woman is a kind-hearted woman, but she is just so focused on having her children like her that she is fearful to ever really, call out their mistakes or give them advice for fear that they might get angry and not like her. And so she has one child now that is 30 years old, still living at home, doesn't like to work very much. And that's all okay with her because they have a good relationship and they're friends. My dad would not have allowed that kind of thing in a million years. And my dad was really not my big buddy when I was a kid. I had lots of friends. My dad and I had fun together at times, but I had a reverence and a respect for him that I didn't have for my buddies. And later on, as I left the nest and grew up, he became this wonderful mentor and adult friend to me that I have respected throughout my adult life, in part because I respected him so much when I was a kid. There's a difference there between the parent and the child, and you need to maintain that distinction. Somebody says, I don't want to discipline my children because I love them so much. Translated, I have such low self-esteem, I can't stand even the short-term rejection discipline might bring. In fact, the irony is that if parents are a pushover and the kids realize that, they typically grow up disrespecting their parents because they're such pushovers. And you don't even wind up having good adult friends because you were so focused on being liked at the moment instead of doing the right thing, regardless of the fact that in the short run, they may not be happy about it. Proverbs 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom. The rod here is a reference, I think, to corporal discipline. Reproof is instruction, explanation, so they understand why the punishment. As soon as your children are able to grasp the connection, you need to talk to them about the principle that's violated and why they need to have this privilege revoked or this discipline or whatever it is. Make sure they connect the two as much as possible. The rod and reproof give wisdom. But a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother and his father. And so, children need instruction, and they need admonition, and they need discipline. Otherwise, they will not learn. I saw this in the paper a while back. Toddler temper oust family. Toddler's temper ousts family from plane. AirTran Airlines on Tuesday defended its decision to remove Massachusetts couple from a flight. That was not done intentionally. I just realized that. After crying, 3-year-old daughter refused to take her seat before takeoff. The flight was already delayed 15 minutes, and in fairness to the other 112 passengers, the crew made an operational decision to remove the family. Julie and Gary, who were headed home to Boston, it's also too close to home, isn't it? January 14th from Fort Myers, said they needed a little more time to calm their daughter, Ellie. She was removed because she was climbing under the seat and hitting the parents and wouldn't get her seat during boarding. Okay. These parents obviously do not have control of their 3-year-old daughter, so much so that they have to miss their flight and be kicked off the plane. Really? I mean, who's in charge here? Why are so many parents today wimps when it comes to appropriately disciplining their children? Just is amazing. Proverbs 13:24. He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. This is sort of against our culture, but let me ask you this. Since we've pretty much done away with corporal punishment, and in some cases people are afraid for someone to see them, lest they get reported to child services or something, let me ask you this. Are we less violent as a culture or more violent since we have disavowed spanking? I mean, it's obvious. We're becoming more and more violent, and we act like the problem is parents spanking their kids? Are you kidding me? I can remember being spanked probably 4 or 5 times by mostly my father growing up. Each time I deserved it, each time it made a huge impression on me, and I'm glad they did. And it was not abusive. In California, a lawmaker floated the bill a while back. Fortunately, it failed. trying to ban spanking. She says, I think it's pretty hard to argue you need to beat a child. Will you please make a distinction between hitting and beating and controlled appropriate spanking? There's no comparison. California parents could face jail time and a fine for spanking their young children under legislation the state lawmakers promised to introduce next week. Democratic Assemblyman Sally Lieber said such a law is needed because spanking victimizes helpless children and breeds violence. Where are these social engineers coming from? Lieber said her proposal would make spanking, hitting, and slapping a child under 4 years old a misdemeanor. Adults could face up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. I wish the government would just stay out of our homes and stop trying to tell us how to raise our kids. My wife, who's very wise about these matters, said, what a shame that the time that spanking is most effective is during the terrible twos and the traumatic threes, and the time the children really need it is the time they're trying to make it illegal. Obviously, abuse is always wrong. You need to be careful as you apply it. But appropriate, controlled spanking is not hitting or abuse necessarily. Teach them to respect your word. The Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in those that are truthful. I think I mentioned this earlier. Make promises fairly and keep them faithfully is what I heard all my life. And so what if you threaten or tell your kids you will do something and then don't follow through? When I preached for a church in Kentucky, one of our deacons told their son that he was mad at them and that he was going to take away their computer for life. Really? I don't think that kind of hyperbole is helpful. Or someone says, you do that, I'm going to wring your neck, or I'm going to ground you for a year, and way out of proportion to the punishment that should be provided given the infraction. Think about what you say, parents. Don't say things you don't mean. Don't threaten things you don't intend to follow through on. If you say something, think through it first and then follow through to the letter. Don't draw lines in the sand and then just ignore the line. Because you're breaking your word. And when you break promises, you break trust. And that breeds disrespect. But if you develop a relationship where you know your kids respect you because you earned that respect, they will be your adult friend and they will learn to honor you and hopefully God as well. So, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., we're going to look at training up a child in the way it should go and what's involved in that. I call this lesson Under Loving Command. And we'll do that during the Bible class period.